beautiful singing tonight as we blend our voices, as Dale said in his prayer. We appreciate your presence here tonight. We appreciate your participation in worship as well. If you have your Bibles, let's go ahead and turn over to Ecclesiastes chapter 3. In just a few moments, I'll be there as we begin our lesson, talking about how God uses the broken. You know, there's so many things that we have in society today that once they break, we just throw them away because it's not worth getting them repaired. I don't know about you, but used to be that when your TV went out, you'd have to wait a long time to have the TV repairman either come out and fix it, or you'd have to get help to load it up in a truck and take it to a TV repair shop. Now, I knew that we were pretty wealthy people growing up, not really, but I knew that we were pretty wealthy people because we had two TVs at one point. Our working TV was sitting on top of our non-working TV. Have you ever had that situation? Yeah. I heard a comedian talk about that years ago, and then I saw some 8mm film from our family one year, and as they were panning around the living room, sure enough, there was the console TV with a portable TV on top of it. So we must have been wealthy people because we had two TVs. But today it seems like when things break, we just throw it away and grab another and go on. We have a low, low tolerance level for things that are broken. But I want you to know that God uses the broken. God uses things. But we use terms like recycle or repurpose today. Well, God's been doing that ever since the beginning of time. And so as we get into this lesson, let's begin now with Ecclesiastes 3 and see what Solomon says about the time. To everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted. Also a time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. Now, we talked this morning about building up and all the different passages about build up, to encourage, to exhort, to stir up love and good works. And also the fact that I will build my church, that word is also the same word used in building up people. Because people are the church. So we want to think in terms of building and making stronger and increasing in our faith and also in our strength as we go through. But as I mentioned a few moments ago, many things that are broken in our life, we just discard. We just toss them away and we think nothing of that. Have you ever felt like you were broken? Have you ever had something in your life that caused you to think, I am broken, I'm not useful, I'm not somebody that can be used in this fashion or that fashion again, in maybe it's in the workplace or maybe it's at church or something else along that line? I know that we struggle with things from time to time because none of us is perfect and we all fail. We all fall short in some way. Maybe we fail in an assignment at work, or maybe it's at school, or maybe it's on the ball field and we just don't do something right. Well, I would hate to think that an athlete would just quit the first time he fumbles a ball or misses a kick or does something else that's not right. No, they might be broken in that play, but they're going to come back. They're going to keep on, and they're going to persevere through those issues. If we look at society around us, we see some things that kind of mimic how nature goes. Now, I know it's not planting season, but when it gets to planting season, I love to roll the windows down when I'm driving through the countryside where there are fields that have just been opened up. You know, they've gone through to open up the fields and stuff. You just smell the dirt. It just makes you feel so good. And then also, you know, makes you feel good to smell that newly cut grass until you realize, hey, I got to go cut my grass too. You know, but one of those things is that when you break the ground, all right, the ground is there and the ground is perfectly content the way it is. But the farmer breaks the ground and plants the seed. And that seed has to die to itself in order to cause that plant to come up. And like with wheat, that wheat or whatever else is there is going to be broken again before we consume it. We have broken things in our life all along. And sometimes the broken things are us. Now, I mentioned briefly about Carla's brain tumor. She had that about a year and a half into our marriage. It wasn't cancerous, and she survived. And I've been very greatly blessed that Carla is in my life today and that she is the lady that she is. And if you've not had a chance to get to know my wife, let me tell you, get ready to smile and laugh a lot because she is a fun person to be around. But now her setback now broke her in some ways. There's some things that she's not able to do now physically because of that. And even after 30 years, she tries to still use that as an excuse with me sometimes. She said, well, you know I had a brain tumor. I said, yeah, you survived it. You know, you ought to be whole now. That doesn't mean I have to unload the dishwasher all the time, you know. The doctor didn't write anything about you not being able to bend over to take those plates out. But, hey, listen, sometimes we feel broken. Now, she can't ride a bicycle today. She could before, but she can't ride a bicycle today. That's one of the things that she's broken in. But you know what? There's not a thing that she needs to do in her life where a bicycle is involved, and I'm thankful for that. She can walk. She can talk. She can write a check. She can earn a check. She can do all these wonderful things. But God uses her, even though she was broken in some sense. I was broken also several years ago. I woke up one morning. I had West Nile virus. I'd been sick for a while. Didn't know what was going on. I spent 8 weeks out of the pulpit, 8 weeks out of work, 8 weeks not being able to do the things that I need to do. God has been good to me. God has been good to Carla. God has been good to us. But there were days that I came out of that and I thought, you know, I'm broken. And there were some others that said, well, you know, let's go ahead and discard that one and go ahead and get us a healthy one, you see. And those notions and thoughts are there. Well, I'm probably washed up. I'm no good to God anymore because this encephalitis and this West Nile virus, they've gotten into my mind and they've played terrible, terrible things on me. You know what? God is good. You know what? God uses the broken. Now, look at these examples. By the way, this lesson, and I think he's still alive, Jerry Davidson. Was an instructor at Heritage Christian years ago, and I took a course under him, maybe two courses. But this is based on a lesson that Jerry has, and I love the fact that God uses the broken. Look at all these. I'm going to turn around and read them. Moses stuttered. David's armor didn't fit. You remember that story, don't you? John Mark was rejected by Paul. Great contention there. Noah got drunk. Hosea's wife was a prostitute. Solomon was too rich. Abraham was too old. David was too young. Look at all these ways that we don't fit into what we think God needs from us. Timothy had ulcers. Peter was afraid of death. Lazarus was dead. Paul was a murderer. So were Moses and David. Jonah ran from God. Miriam was a gossip. Elijah was burned out. Thomas doubted. And Peter betrayed Jesus. Now, you look at this list, and I want you to really to look at these screens. Look at this list. Pick any one of these guys out or ladies out, and you think about what you really know about them. When you think about King David, you don't think about him being a murderer. You think about him being a man after God's own heart. When you think about Noah, you don't think about him getting drunk afterwards. You think about him preaching for 120 years and pleading his heart out with people to be right with God and then having to have that door shut with all of humanity out there to die and perish because they rejected God. God uses the broken. God uses the people who fall and fail and stumble and don't do exactly right all the time. God makes good use of us. You know why? Because we, every single one of us, has a value to God. You know what you and I have that the animals don't have? We have an eternal spirit, a soul. And that was given to us, and it is ours and ours alone. Shirley MacLaine and all the others, notwithstanding, that think that we've been reincarnated. We've not. Okay? This is ours. God gave us that spirit. One day he's going to take it back up again. We're going to meet God on the judgment day. We're going to have to give an account for everything that we did in this life. There's not been a single solitary person on this earth that ever lived a sinless life except for Jesus Christ. Every single person who's ever put on Christ has done so because they are sinners. They've fallen short. They failed in some way. They've stumbled. They've fallen. And God helped them to get up and to be right and to be whole. I look at this list and I am encouraged. Because when I look at the obstacles and look at what society says we can't do because of our limitations or failures, I look at this list and say, this is what God says we can do. See, I love this because we can be used by God even though we've been broken. Well, let's look at a couple of passages now. The first one over in the Old Testament of Judges, Old Testament book Judges chapter 7. Let's look at verses 16 through 21. You know the story here of Gideon. And as he's preparing his people for battle, I'm just going to read through this passage. You know the story, but just notice here what's being broken. And he divided the 300 men into three companies. This is Gideon, part of his strategy here. And he put a trumpet in every man's hand and empty pitchers and torches inside the pitchers. All right, so the pitchers are hiding the torches. And he said to them, look at me and do likewise. Watch, and when I come to the edge of the camp, you shall do as I do. And when I blow the trumpet and when all who are with me, then you also blow the trumpets on every side of the whole camp and say, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. So Gideon and the 100 men who were with him came out to the outpost of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch, just as they had posted the watch. And then they blew the trumpets and broke the pitchers that were in their hands. And then the three companies blew the trumpets, broke their pitchers, and held their torches in their left hands and their trumpets in their right hands for blowing. And they cried, "The sword of the Lord and of Gideon." And every man stood in his place around the camp. And the whole army ran and cried out and fled. You see, I love that, because what they were doing, they had that light there. They were breaking the pitchers, and then that light was coming out. Don't you love it how theme runs through all the Bible? I love it because the light and darkness contrast that's going on and being played out throughout the Bible is so good for us. Turn over to Matthew chapter 5. I know that you need know this passage, but look at what Jesus says about us. Matthew chapter 5, verses 14 through 16, he says that you are the light of the world. Now, those pitchers that they had in their left hands, they had torches inside. And so as they broke the pitchers, the light was shining. And can you imagine now those guys that were up there, the guards, the watch had just been changed over, and they're looking out. And now on three sides, they hear the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. And then these pitchers are broken, and those torches start to light up, and it looks like a whole mass of people out there. Army ran. They fled. Well, the torches were inside something that needed to be broken. Jesus says, "You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they put a lot of lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house." So he says, "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." We need to be broken in some way so our light can shine through, so people can see what it is that we're doing as good people. Now, I know over a chapter later, over in chapter 6, he's talking about, you know, don't do your good deeds to be seen by others. And so there's that balance in life. But listen, people need to know that Christians care. People need to know that Christians do good things for people who aren't always deserving of those things. People need to know that we represent Jesus Christ. And as we do something, we do so in his name and for the purpose of glorifying God the Father. So let's let our light shine. And if we need to be broken in some way for that light to shine, then so be that. In Exodus chapter 32, and we're not going to read that passage, but that's where it talks about the golden calf. Now, you know about the golden calf. Moses and the children of Israel are there. And Moses is going up now to get the Ten Commandments. And Aaron is there with the people. And the people come to Aaron and says, "Aaron, you know, Moses has been gone for a long time, and we're getting kind of restless here. We don't know what's happened to him. Why don't we fashion an idol?" And Aaron, being the stalwart person that he said, "Okie dokie, let's do that." Now, I'm paraphrasing badly in that, but you know what's going on, right? What he's saying is, he says, "Okay, you break off your earrings, you bring us the gold," and then they fashion this calf out of gold, and then they said, "Here is the God that brought us out of Egypt." No, that's not the God that brought you out of Egypt. That is a man-made idol there before you because you have been exposed to idolism and idolatry for all these years, and that is what you're falling back on because your faith is weak and you don't trust God and you don't trust Moses who had just left. Well, Moses comes back, and if you read in that account, and I hope that you will later on tonight or this week, you'll read that Moses is there and God talks with Moses and says, "Moses, you better go back because these people are stiff-necked and they're already turned back. And they're going back to old ways, and you need to go straighten them out." God's wrath is really, it's building up. And Moses goes there and confronts those people. And in the end, here's what happens. Okay, a little bit later on in chapter 32 and verse 20, Moses takes that gold calf and he grinds it all up. And then the ground gold powder then is mixed with water, and he makes everybody to drink it. There are times in our lives that we need to lay aside things that compete with God. Look with me over to 1 John and 1 John chapter 2. And let's look over there and see where John is talking about the things that we sometimes battle with. And I know that these are broad in category, but these categories really encompass everything in life for which we have this competition with God. John says, "Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him." Now, that doesn't mean that you cannot love sweet corn, watermelon, okra. You can tell I have not had supper yet tonight. Or Alabama football or Kentucky basketball or anything else. That's not the kind of love he's talking about. He's talking about things that are put above God in the priority in life. You see, I can love God, and if God is number one in my life, I can appreciate everything that God gives us in this world. What he's talking about here is about when we replace God, when we have God up here and we take him down and we put something else in his place because that's what we love more than God. Let's go on in this passage. He says, for all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, and those are the three broad categories there, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And then he says, and the world is passing away and the lust of it, but he who does the will of God abides forever. We don't need to love the world. We need to love God and then appreciate the things that God gives us. So you take those three, the lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, and you take any sin and problem that we can fall into, and they're going to fall into at least one, if not multiple, of those three categories. What John is saying is you can't do that. You can't do that. You've got to put that out. You've got to break away from that. You've got to come back and be solid with God. Well, that was what God used. God used that broken golden calf to teach them a lesson to say, stay away from idolatry. All right, now there's a situation over in the book of Mark, Mark chapter 14. We're just going to look at a couple of verses there where a woman comes to Jesus, and Jesus is surrounded by a lot of people who are more important than this woman, who are more righteous than this woman, at least in their own minds. And here's what happens now. We're in Mark chapter 14, rather. Verses 3 and 8. And being in Bethany at the house of Simon the leper, as he sat at a table, a woman came having an alabaster flask of very costly oil of spikenard, and she broke the flask and poured it on his head. But there were some who were indignant and among themselves and said, why was this fragrant oil wasted? For it might have been sold for more than 300 denarii and the money given to the poor. And they criticized her very sharply. Now, here's a gathering of people who are righteous, who are following Jesus, who are wanting to learn from him and be around him and have the importance of Jesus rub off on them. And can you imagine something happening to the Lord like that? And then people inside that circle of religious people would be critical of others? See, there's a long history of people who forget that we're here to serve God, who forget that we're here to uplift and uphold what God has given us. Now, this woman comes to Jesus, and she has this container, and she breaks it open, and inside is almost a year's worth of wages worth of this fragrant oil. 300 denarii. Denarii would be about, one would be about a day's wage. And you don't work every single day, but if you worked it out, maybe about 300 days is about what you would work. And so here's a year's worth. Think about your salary. Would you take something that was worth a year's worth of your salary and then in one moment just break it and use it and be done? That's what this woman was doing. I don't know how she came about having it. Maybe it was an heirloom. Maybe it was something that she'd worked towards. But now she comes and she anoints Jesus with it. And the people that are around say, we could have used that in other ways. They were critical of what she was doing. She was serving the Lord. There are times that we need to realize that people who are serving the Lord need to be praised and not criticized, need to be uplifted for what they're doing. Now, notice that she had this and it was hers to use. Others were critical of it. But what we own isn't really ours. Carl and I have owned several vehicles and several homes, houses rather. A home is what we take with us. But, you know, I sold one of her vehicles a few weeks ago. Someone else owns that vehicle now. It's going to be around town. And the houses that we used to live we would go by and see those houses from time to time. We'd go back to old neighborhoods and drive by, wonder who lives there now. Well, that's not our house now. We sing the song, don't we, Todd? This world is not our home. I'm just a passing through. All the things that we have in this life, once we die, they all go to other people. In unpacking boxes, I've come across some family heirlooms and things that I've treasured over the years. And I've got tons of my dad's stuff that I don't know what to do with it. All of his papers from when he was preaching and other such times. And I've got all of that I've used and am using. And I still have a surplus of some. I've given a lot off to the students at the Nashville School of Preaching, but there's still more. And then I get to other relatives and my great grandmother. I've got different trinkets and things from her and a piece of furniture. And then her husband, who died before I was born, all I have from him is a gold pocket watch from when he worked on the railroads. But I look at these things, and now this used to belong to this person. I've got a personal connection with it. But when I die, those things might be just summarily thrown out with the trash. I don't know. All the things that we have are simply just things, but we sometimes treasure them more than we should. What expensive things do we have? What things do we have that we would be willing to give up for Jesus? Let's go back over to Matthew chapter 6. Let's look at a couple of short verses there. In verse 19 to begin, Jesus says, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But instead, lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal." And this is the key: for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. We had quite the adventure of packing up and getting ready to move down here. And we had a little bit of time where we're traveling back and forth before the movers came. And I decided to take several of the things that we really treasure, Carla's china and some other things. And I decided we're going to pack that up and we're going to take that in our vehicle and we're going to transport it down to Alabama ourselves. And Carla says, "You don't trust the movers?" And I said, "No, not really. I've seen how they move sometimes and how some things get broken." And we had a few things broken in transit, but those were things that we really cherished. Those were the heirlooms, or those were the things that we really had a personal, sentimental connection to. And I wanted to make sure that they were here safely. Now, you think about the things that we really treasure in this life. Your spouse and your children, your family around you, the things that really make life worth living. And there's hardly anything that you won't do in order to make sure that they are safe and that they are okay and that they have what they have. Sometimes, though, we see the things in our life that gets in the way of the people and the things that are really, really important. When our treasure is with God, how does that change the way that we look at others? When our treasure is with God and not with ourselves, how does that change the way that we interact with others even when we come to worship? You see, my treasure is with God. That's where my heart's going to be. If my treasure is in defending my territory of my seat, my pew, then my heart's not really where it ought to be with God. And we've had lots of visitors throughout the last few weeks, and that's been super. And I've noticed and kind of chuckled at times because sometimes visitors will come in and they'll take somebody else's pew. And I think, oh, boy, I wonder where that family's going to go. And then they'll shift a pew or two back or off to another side. And we kind of joke about that. But do you know, when I read literature about church growth and about how to improve church relationships, that always comes up on the list of, if there's a list of 8 or 10 things that visitors and guests, you know, really feel anxious about, it's about getting someone's seat. Because, you know, Sister so-and-so or Brother so-and-so, they've sat on that pew for 50 years. That's their pew. It might even have a brass plaque on it. I don't know. Sometimes they do that. At Carla's home church, they have some pews where people did buy the pew and their name is on it. You know, her mom and dad have a pew with their name on it. They don't sit on that pew. They sit on somebody else's pew. But that's the way it goes. But what happens when we forget that a pew is just a pew? That it doesn't matter where you sit. It matters who you worship. It matters what we do to build up each other, as we talked about this morning. It matters what we're able to cast aside as of no value or no thought to us in order to use for the purpose of somebody that's there. Can you imagine, for example, if an EMS ambulance came out and they said, "Well, you know, he might need this medical help, but, you know, we got all this brand new equipment in, and I don't know if we want to really mess it up right now until we make sure that he's dying." No, listen, you bring it out. If I fall out and you think I'm having a heart attack, you bring those paddles out. You bring whatever it is. You know, I don't have a do not resuscitate on me yet, you know, so you do what you can. You spare no expense. You try to save my life because I hope that's your job. Now, if it's not your job to use those paddles, don't you use them on me, okay? We've been through some defibrillator classes before, and I've looked around seeing some of the people take the class. And you just say that prayer, "Lord, please, you know, if I have to have it, don't let that person be the one in charge of the paddles, you know." You want, though, there are times that you need to have these things in life, and you think, okay, this is of no value to me. What really is valuable is this person. We need to lay aside the things that we think are valuable or of value, and we need to focus on the person. Sometimes we focus too much on money. Sometimes we focus too much on numbers. When we focus on God and when we focus on people who have souls and spirits, we'll find the answers that we need. Now, at this point, and again, this is adapted from a sermon from Jerry Davison. Jesus, none of his bones were broken, but his body ceased to live, ceased to have life in it. John 19, verse 34, it talks about the soldier there and the spear that was thrust up into his side. And we all know about that story and how outflowed blood and water, showing the differences. The blood had already started to separate, and so he had been dead for some time. But do you realize that if Jesus Christ had not died the death that he did, that you and I would not have the hope that we have? And that's the wonderful part about this, you see, because Jesus had to die. I don't know. I still can't explain it. We'll sit in a Bible study and somebody will say, but I don't understand. Why did Jesus have to die like that? Why couldn't Jesus have just come down and had a proclamation of some sort or set up some other? You see, this is man's wisdom. This is us trying to get into the mind of God to tell God how he should be doing his business. We don't understand until we go back to the beginning of life and we begin to see how the sacrificial system works and how the law of Moses is there and how all of these things are there only temporary. And now we have the perfect Lamb of God that's there without spot or blemish, and he becomes the sacrifice for us. His blood is there. All this is not just imagery. It's a whole part of the culture that has been in place. And so as we begin to understand, we realize it was necessary for Jesus to die. Now, Jesus in the garden, he prayed, if it's possible, Lord, let this cup pass from me. In other words, if we have to do this, this is okay, but if there's another way, that's okay too. But remember what he said in that setting? Nevertheless, not what I will, but what your will. Your will is what needs to be done. Jesus Christ, the Son of God, the one that was here to raise the dead and to cure all the sick and to teach the others and to walk on water, to do all of these things, Jesus Christ humbled himself, and there in the garden he's praying and he's deeply praying. And he says, it's not my will, but it's yours. If my body needs to be broken, then that's what needs to happen. If you watched any of the movies that depict the torture that was given to Jesus, and some have been very gruesome, they're hard to watch. And even people who aren't Christians would look at that and they would comment and talk about, if this happened, what a commitment that this man would put himself through that before that death for his cause. But when I think of what Jesus did, and there he is, and they're beating him, they're slashing his back with those whips, with the little shards of metal and bone and such on the ends. And he's bleeding, and he's got that crown of thorns, and it's not just like a rose thorn. These are longer thorns. And that's been hit into his head, and so he's got wounds there. And all of these things he is doing because of the sins that we have committed. That's the only reason why he came, was because we had sinned and separated ourselves from God. And I look at that, and I understand. I understand God's plan just on the surface. I can't understand it more deeply to really reach out to people. But had Jesus died this natural death, we would not have had the sacrifice that we needed. I'm thankful that Jesus was broken in that sense, because he's whole and because we have hope of heaven. Now, this last passage now has to do with a broken heart. Let's turn over to Psalm chapter 51. I love this passage. We've talked about it on occasion here. This ties in with 2 Samuel 12 as Nathan goes to David and says, you are the man, outs him for the sins that he's committed with Bathsheba. This psalm is written as a result of that. And as we get into the psalm, let's just read beginning in verse 7 down through 17. David says, purge me with hyssop and I shall be clean. Wash me and I shall be whiter than snow. Make me hear joy and gladness, that the bones that you have broken may rejoice. Hide your face from my sins and blot out all of my iniquities. You see, David knows that he's a broken man. He's the king, okay? Nobody was greater than the king except, of course, God. And so as the king, David thought he could do as he wished and he could get away with all these things. And in the end, he realizes that he is not God and that God has really given him a great benefit in sparing him. Verse 10, create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a steadfast spirit within me. Do not cast me away from your presence and do not take your Holy Spirit from me. Restore to me the joy of your salvation and uphold me by your generous spirit. Then I will teach transgressors your ways and sinners shall be converted to you. Remember, these are the words of a king who has been humbled and brought to his knees, who saw his child die as a direct result of his sins. And now he is pleading with God. You set me right. You put me back. I'm a broken person, but you put me back and I will be there for you and I will serve you. Notice verse 14. Deliver me from the guilt of bloodshed, O God, the God of my salvation, and my tongue shall sing aloud of your righteousness. O Lord, open my lips, and my mouth shall show forth your praise. For you do not desire sacrifice, or else I would give it. And you do not delight in burnt offerings. But now notice verse 17. Here's the key for us. The sacrifices of God are a broken spirit, a broken and contrite heart. These, O God, you will not despise. You see, that broken spirit, that broken heart, doesn't mean that he needed a pacemaker. It meant that he had a whole different attitude on things. David needed to be humbled. David needed to be brought down. David sinned, and David needed to be punished for that. But also, David had gotten bigger than he should have been, and this was an opportunity now for David to be humbled and be brought back with God. You think back to that list of others that I put up on that screen before, and Abraham and Noah and Paul and all these others, and you'll find that they all likewise had times in their lives where they got bigger than they should have been. And there were things to bring them back. Paul says, you know, a thorn in the flesh has been given to me to buffet me, to prevent me from doing some things, to bring me back to remember what my place is. A broken heart leads to being submissive and humble and obedient. There is a God, and I am not him. A broken heart helps me to realize what God has done for me. A broken heart helps me to realize that I am human. I will make mistakes. You will fail from time to time, sometimes spectacularly, and the whole world will be looking on when you make a mistake. But you know what? God uses the broken. God uses people who make mistakes. And I am thankful to God that we have such a wonderful, loving God that is not vengeful on us to destroy us every time that we make a mistake or the first time that we do. But as Peter writes in 2 Peter 3 and verse 9, that the Lord is not slack concerning his promises, some count slackness, but is patient, long-suffering toward us, not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. We need to know when we are broken, when we are down, that is the very time that we need to be thinking about coming to God. I love this hymn here. Bring Christ your broken life, so marred by sin. He will create anew and make whole again. Your empty, wasted years he will restore, and your iniquities remember no more. I love that song, and so many of the hymns that we sing, we're so familiar with them, we don't realize what we're singing when we use these words. Think about the words that we sing. Think about what they mean. Think about how they apply to our lives. And think about how you and I have known people, and sometimes it's been us, who's been in that situation where we say, oh, I have messed up so bad. I am of no good to anybody anymore. Don't you believe it? Don't you believe it? Because God is looking down on us knowing everybody's messed up. Everybody's made mistakes. And just because you've made a mistake doesn't mean that God can't use you. As a matter of fact, the mistake that you made, that you worry about, that you pray about, that you don't know, that you wrestle with, may be the very thing that brings you closer to God so that God can use you for his service. Yes, God uses the broken. And I'm thankful for that. I've been a broken man before, and I will be a broken man again, over things that happen in life, over things that I do, and over problems that we all face and encounter. You will be broken at times too. Use the time of brokenness to come back to God and to be stronger with him. Tonight we have a song of encouragement that's been selected. If you need to come to God either to put on Christ in baptism or to refresh and renew a relationship with God, why don't you do so now while we stand and sing.